Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likens the annual Academy Awards broadcast to a high school popularity contest. The most deserving films might take home Oscar gold, but let's get real. Since when has actual accomplishment ever been able to overcome personal appeal? The three of us over the years have had questionable success at guessing Oscar results, but that hasn't stopped us from trying. We'll strive again to figure out the collective mind of the 10,000-plus members of the Motion Picture Academy based on what info we have compiled, blended with our personal preferences or opinions. And then we'll argue about who and what we think should win, which may prove interesting. Whatever, let's start the way the Oscars broadcast historically has, with the best supporting acting categories. Now, let me run down those nominees. Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. And I think we all agree, the odds-on favorite there has to be Downey.
Yeah, and I think when we reviewed Oppenheimer back in the summer, I'm pretty sure I went out on a limb and said Robert Downey Jr. will probably win the Academy Award for this movie. Not because I thought that he necessarily deserves it, because we also had 6 months left to go in the year, and I hadn't seen a lot of performances that ended up on this list, actually. But just because it felt like one of those right place, right time kind of things. It's the first kind of post-Marvel performance he's given where he's really been able to sink his teeth into it. It's a physically transformative performance. And it's also just, you know, that time in his career where he's just primed to win the Academy Award. So I think he's pretty much
the resurrection of his career.
Absolutely.
Was basically as Iron Man and then Sherlock Holmes, both likable characters. He's anything but likable in Oppenheimer.
And he's been nominated a few times before. So,
and of course, I may be one of the few viewers who sort of liked that inquiry, but that may be the only downside to his performance, is the fact that it was sort of, in some respects, the dullest part of the movie, and he made it come alive.
Yeah, I would give him that. So yeah, I think if there are categories this year that are locks, it's in the supporting fields of Downey.
And
sure,
I have to say that if you look at all the other performances here, each of them is strong. Not a huge fan, interestingly, of the Robert De Niro performance in Killers of the Flower Moon.
I'm prepared to take on
both of you.
And I am a fan of that one because
he's so scary in that movie.
In a way that De Niro hasn't been in all his gangster films.
It's
completely
different kind of evil.
And Sterling K. Brown was amazing in American Fiction. Ryan Gosling, as far as I'm concerned, was the best thing about Barbie.
And I will say, if I were voting, I think I would go with Ryan Gosling, and I'll tell you why. I love in the supporting actor fields whenever they go for just a big, goofy comic performance. It's pretty much the only time you can win an Oscar for one of those performances is in supporting. I'm thinking Kevin Kline in A Fish Called Wanda, Mercedes Rule in The Fisher King.
Right.
They haven't awarded one of those performances in a while, and I think Ryan Gosling is so funny in Barbie.
He's
who I would vote for, but I do think Downey will take
Let's not forget Mark Ruffalo, because that was tough to play against Emma Stone's performance.
That's a big, wild comic performance
Let's move on to supporting actress. We have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrara for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. And I'm going to say right away, neither Mary Pat or I saw Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, so we're out of it there. And I'm wondering, seriously, why Emily Blunt is even on this list. You know, she was a very small part of Oppenheimer, and I like Emily Blunt, but I didn't think she was particularly good.
As you know, I was not a fan of America Ferrara's performance in Barbie. I just thought she was miscast.
So to me, it's between Divine Joy Randolph and Jodie Foster, and it's a lock for Randolph.
Yeah.
So what about Danielle Brooks?
Well, I have seen The Color Purple, and she's terrific in the movie. Everyone is kind of terrific in that movie. I mean, and it is truly a supporting role. She's only in the movie for about, I don't know, 15 minutes maybe, and disappears for long sections. She's playing Sophia, which is the role that Oprah Winfrey was Oscar nominated for in the Spielberg version of The Color Purple. But it's definitely one of those performances where you go, you know, I'd like to see more Danielle Brooks. She was on Orange is the New Black, you know, part of a big ensemble. She's really good in this movie. I would agree with you. I think my two favorite performances of the five are Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers and Jodie Foster for Naiad. I thought Jodie Foster was the best thing in Naiad, a movie that I didn't particularly like very much. And when we reviewed The Holdovers, we talk so much about those three central performances and hers in particular. I kind of wish that Dominic Sessa, first time actor who played the young kid in that movie, I kind of wish he was in the supporting actor field because I think his performance was nomination.
You know, he's won some awards, though. Yeah. Dominic Sessa was like best newcomer award for
breakthrough
for some,
roles.
Yeah,
things
right,
like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. So he's getting noted.
We'll see more of him, I'm sure.
And then, of course, Divine Joy Randolph shows up in Rustin.
Yeah, it's true. And I agree with you that she is the lock in this category. I think it would be surprising if she didn't.
It would be shocking if she didn't. So let's finish this first half of the show by talking about Best Actor. We have Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. And those are five really pretty good performances. But I think that
okay,
well, which one
us.
Which one don't you like?
Bradley Cooper in Maestro.
I hate
his performance in that movie. It's everything I dislike about big Oscar baity look at what I can do performances. And I have seen this narrative develop on social media and amongst critics that Bradley Cooper has become almost like the villain of Oscar season. People love piling on this guy because he wants Oscar badly.
As you are doing right now.
Well, yes. But I don't have a problem with him as a person. Don't get me wrong. And
do people have a problem with him as a person?
I think so because
he's too eager.
He's so earnest and he's so cheesy. And I think that's why. And I actually like that about him. I think we need more cheesiness in celebrities. And
You're
I've
just
loved
contradicting
him.
Yourself all over
no,
the
I'm
place.
Not. I've loved him in other movies. I'm talking about the performance in Maestro, which is also a movie I didn't like. All I saw was technique. It's a lot of the complaints that people have leveled at, say, Meryl Streep over the years.
Exactly.
Where people that don't like Meryl Streep as a performer say, all I can see is her acting. All I can see is technique. And that's what I felt about Bradley Cooper in Maestro. I mean, I should probably not say it's a bad performance because technically it's very good. But I didn't feel any emotion in that performance.
All right, enough of beating Bradley Cooper to death.
Sorry.
Like, what about
I loved you in Silver Linings Playbook. How about that?
What about the other four? Colman Domingo and Rustin.
I love Colman Domingo. I don't know if that's a nomination-worthy performance. The other three, Giamatti, Murphy, and Wright, I cannot
and see,
put
this,
with.
And see, this is where it gets me. I've never liked Giamatti. I mean, what? I liked him in Sideways.
Yeah.
But everything else, he's Paul Giamatti. He tailors every single role he plays to his one single strength.
I guess that's why they hired him, right? Because
they wanted
a Paul Giamatti type.
And, I mean, and I thought he was fine in this, but is it an Oscar-worthy role? No.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. I'm going to push back on that.
Yeah,
I do think so.
You go right ahead.
He won. He carried the movie. And granted, I have a little bit of a bias because it was about education and an educational setting.
Yeah.
But even his physical performance, I mean, he's still Paul Giamatti, but that was, I thought, pretty incredible. Moreover, you can see him change throughout the course of this movie, but not in a big way. It was very subtle. And for Paul Giamatti, to me, for me to use subtle and Paul Giamatti in the same sentence is notable.
Well, and I also think that he has a really big challenge in this movie, in The Holdovers, of trying to be likable but prickly at the same time.
Correct.
You keep waiting, and I think in a lesser movie it would have happened. You keep waiting for that third act turning over of a new leaf. And that doesn't really happen. He kind of goes back to his old ways, but we understand his ways more by the end of the movie. And the relationship he has with the Dominic Sessa character and with the Divine Joy Randolph character are really warm and believable, I think. The fact that he makes that character more than just the irascible kind of wannabe professor figure is, you know, I think it makes it nomination.
Okay, so Dan, make your case for Cillian Murphy.
Well, Cillian Murphy won the BAFTA, he won the Golden Globe for drama, and he won SAG. So in terms of if you're trying to fill out a rap sheet, he's the one. I just think that Cillian Murphy, well, he's the heart and soul of the movie Oppenheimer, which is odds-on favorite to win the Best Picture. And I think the basis of his career, he's played all sorts of different characters. He brings a feeling of insecurity and yet arrogance and intelligence and yet not abilities to understand and read people. I mean, his performance as Oppenheimer is probably the most intellectually stimulating and challenging of all these.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. It's just hard for me to erase Cillian Murphy as the
That's because you seem
star
as Peaky
Blinders. I can't erase that from my head, you know, after watching that series because he's so good in
that.
He
is so good.
And Oppenheimer, I mean, again, it's a strange role to play because the guy is not very likable. So the fact that he was able to engage me at all, I thought was worthwhile.
Well, and you talk about interiority. That mm-hmm. performance is so interior. Mm-hmm. And that's not the kind of acting the Academy always gravitates towards. Most often they go for the big showy thing, which is why at the beginning of kind of award season, I thought Cooper was going to sweep it. But now it seems to be sort of a dead heat between Giamatti and Murphy. I agree with you that Murphy is probably the odds-on favorite, but Giamatti is beloved in the industry,
There is a showy part to Cillian Murphy's performance, and that is he must have dropped 30 pounds to play this role because he is not that emaciated.
And his face is, angular.
So it's
between those
and
two guys.
Jeffrey Wright, excellent performance.
Excellent performance.
Not an Oscar contender at this group.
Performance by a superb actor.
Bradley Cooper, I apologize. You know, if you're listening, let me tell you, you're doing great work.
You're not going to his Sunday brunch anymore.
No, my invitation got lost in the mail.
And that was our rundown of the first three categories of Sunday's annual Oscars fiesta. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Best Actress, Best Director, Best Motion Picture, and, given time, whatever else is left over. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss Sunday's Oscars broadcast and the nominees for Best Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress, and Best Actor. Let's continue with another trio of categories, Best Actress, Best Director, and Best Motion Picture. Start with Best Actress. The nominees are Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. Ooh. Mary Pat, give us your choice there.
Emma Stone, Poor Things.
Yeah, me too.
And I have to say, the reason why I chose this is because I saw that trailer 100 times, maybe more, and I did not even want to go see the movie. And she completely won me over with her performance. I mean, it was sophisticated. It was feminist. You know, she just took over the entire screen.
Total challenging role.
Yeah, physically and otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is my favorite category of the ones we're talking about today, because I think three of these five
I agree.
Maybe
four.
I'm going to say three of them are amongst maybe my three favorite performances of the entire year of 2023, which is Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, and Emma Stone in Poor Things. I mean, honestly, if any of those win, it will be absolutely deserved, and I won't complain at all, because I think all three of them are doing maybe career best work. I mean, some of them we haven't. They have a lot of career ahead of them, but so far, you know, it's the three best performances any of them have given.
Yeah, and Hüller was also in The Zone of Interest.
Yes, so. And was honestly in contention for Best Supporting Actress for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep going back and forth and back and forth on which of these three I would vote for. I'm probably in camp Lily Gladstone, but I also think about, again, the level of difficulty of Sandra Hüller's performance, because not only does she have to keep us questioning her guilt, her innocence, what she's really thinking, what her motivations might be, but she's also having to navigate all the different languages that that character is forced to speak, and changing her proficiency in language based on, you know, the situation that she's in. So,
and of course, we
there's a lot
as
of
people from the U.S. will always admire that because
because we don't know anything.
And I too liked Lily Gladstone's performance, but compare her performance in that to even something such as Fancy Dance. I mean, where she was really had to inhabit a completely different character. Mm-hmm. And of course, whenever you have a performance where somebody has an illness, it always gets your attention. And I'm going to be a little bit more supportive of Annette Bening's performance in Naiad. I mean, she does not have necessarily a lengthy career left. We don't know for sure, obviously. But that physical performance was really hard. And this was a really unlikable character.
Unlikable character.
And I love Annette Bening. So, you know, and Carey Mulligan, who I think is great most of the time, also just.
Let's face it, you did not like Maestro, right?
Yeah, right. Let's move on to Best Director. Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. Interestingly enough, he's a British director, and that's a German language film. Yorgos Lanthimos Poor Things, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Justin Triet, Anatomy of a Fall. You know, I think that Nolan is leading pretty much all the polls and everything. But geez, Scorsese in Killers of the Flower Moon, an 81-year-old guy who can make a movie that good, that long, that rich, that powerful.
Yeah, I got to say, I think these are five really strong.
I agree.
Really strong. Lanthimos and Poor Things.
Oh, yeah.
What a unique, strange, cockeyed, weird film.
And I know that people, including me, were a little bummed that Greta Gerwig didn't get in here. But it's a huge deal that Justine Triet was nominated for Anatomy of a Fall. You know, that I think that kind of got overlooked. And Jonathan Glazer. I mean, I think that got overlooked a little bit in that kind of kerfuffle. But all five of these movies have such a strong vision. But I would agree with you that Nolan is the front runner here. He won the DGA award. It's also one of those, you know, it's finally his time to win.
Of course, we do have some of that. Now, typically we'll see a split sometimes between best director, best film, best screenplay, and so forth.
It's happening more and more as the nominees for best picture, they expanded it to 10.
So do you think there's going to be a split here among those categories? So if you pick Nolan, for example, Dan, what would you say about the movie itself? Oppenheimer.
Should we get into the Best Picture nominees? Since I think it's pretty clear we all agree it's Nolan.
Let's run down the Best Picture nominees. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Well, I think that you look at what it has won. Oppenheimer's won the BAFTA, the American Society of Editors for Drama, Critics' Choice, Golden Globe, Online Film Critics, and the big one, the Producers Guild of America.
It also won the SAG Award for Ensemble Cast, which has in recent years kind of become the ultimate bellwether for what is going to win Best
Picture.
Which
seems strange to me in some respects.
Well, I think it's because the actors branch of the Academy is the biggest branch of the Academy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
So that's kind of their Best Picture winner, and so that's usually why it translates. Like Everything Everywhere All at Once got that same award last year. Parasite won it. That was when everyone realized, oh, Parasite's in this to win it.
Yeah.
And Coda, that was another movie that went on to win Best Picture kind of a surprise win for that SAG Ensemble Award.
Exactly.
So my concern here is I have always been intrigued by how somebody can direct a film and star in a film at the same time. And so if you look at that, I mean, I know you're not a fan of Maestro, but I think that that combination was really compelling. But will it win Best Picture? I don't think so.
No. And I'm surprised there hasn't been more support for Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean,
this happens to Scorsese pretty much every year, though, because I think people assume like, well, you know, he's kind of generally considered the greatest working director. He's a legend. Everyone who's in that field worships the ground that Scorsese walks on. And so maybe they just kind of assume he doesn't need an Oscar. But let's not forget that he has only won a single Academy Award.
I know, that's unbelievable.
Whether or not you believe in the concept of snubs, he has been overlooked many, many times, often for some of the greatest American films ever made. You know, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, he lost all of those. So I also think that maybe because the movie came out in October, it sort of lost momentum while movies like The Holdovers and Poor Things and even The Zone of Interest kind of picked up that momentum because they were released later in the year. They have that advantage because of it. Even though Oppenheimer, which is the favorite to win here, was a summertime release.
Well, going back and referring to Barbenheimer, you think Barbie has a chance?
For Best Picture, I don't think so.
I love that the Golden Globe has this. Basically, the movie that was the most popular and won the most money.
That's a stupid category for an award show because the award that Barbie won was the most money at the box office.
Exactly.
Like, it's already the champ there. It doesn't need a Golden Globe to solidify that. But that's neither
here
nor there.
So we think basically Oppenheimer. Let's look at some of these other ones. How about Best Animated Film? It's a split between The Boy and the Heron, the Miyazaki film, which won BAFTA, Golden Globe, and the National Board of Review, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which won Critics' Choice, Online Film Critics, Producers Guild of America, and the American Society of Editors.
I love The Boy and the Heron.
I think that the goodwill towards Miyazaki and the fact that he has claimed this is his final film, although he said that before,
may win
him that. The last Spider-Verse movie did win this award, and Miyazaki has not won
Spirited Away
20 years ago. So, I don't know. I think I'm going to lean towards The Boy and the Heron for no other reason than
how about the
Miyazaki.
Best foreign language film or best film not in English or whatever? I mean, we have Io Capitano from Italy, Perfect Days from Japan, Society of the Snow from Spain, The Teacher's Lounge from Germany, and The Zone of Interest from the United Kingdom.
Well, you'll notice what isn't on this list, Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
And so that probably would have been my choice had it been
France
listed
did not
here.
Submit it as its
I know. Interestingly
film, yeah.
enough, so mm-hmm. we needed to tell Which a little bit about the backstory because that, it's on the list for best film.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You
and,
know, you
and it won
both.
The Golden Globe.
Right. So I think of this category, I would probably choose The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
But
agreed.
I thought Perfect Days
Perfect
was
Days.
A perfect
wonderful,
film.
Wonderful movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Zone of Interest has the edge here, and I would probably vote for it as well.
And what about the screenplay categories? I mean, I never know what to do with those, honestly.
Read off the adapted screenplay.
Okay, adapted MP. Screenplay, American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. So do you think Barbie's going to get something here?
No, I think American Fiction is the favorite here. It's been kind of cleaning up at all of these screenplay competitions.
And it won the BAFTA.
Yeah. I think of these five, I really like the screenplay for Poor Things. I would love to see that win. It's probably got a shot, too. I think the Academy really loves that movie, but probably American Fiction. And then I can read through original screenplay. We've got Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, and Past Lives. I'm so happy to see May, December here, which is a movie I love. Only nomination.
It won the National Society of Film Critics Award.
I don't think it's got a chance here, unfortunately.
I don't either.
I think it's between Anatomy of a Fall and The Holdovers, but Past Lives.
I know.
People love Past Lives. I could see that winning, too.
Yeah, I think that here, I still don't really understand the distinction between original and adapted screenplay because Barbie's like adapted for some reason because Barbie existed in the world.
Yeah.
Well, May, December existed in the world
it's
too,
true.
So I don't really understand. My choice would be Past Lives, but I don't think it's going to get enough traction in time to take over
Past Lives
this particular
such,
category.
Such a beautiful film. At any rate, that was our preview of Sunday's Academy Awards broadcast. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I was joined, as always, by my co-hosts Nathan Weinbender and Mary Pat Truthart. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from comic actor Billy Crystal. Nothing can take the sting off the world's economic problems like watching millionaires present each other golden statues. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.